This is the introduction to the Vermilion County or Commercial News.
Danville's Aaron W. Patton's excavating and earth-moving business received a $16,469 investment to purchase and install a 12 kW solar array. This will result in more than $2,000 in energy cost savings per year and will replace more than 17,000 kilowatt hours yearly, which is enough energy to power one home. U.S. Department of Agriculture Acting State Director Molly Hammond on Friday announced the latest investments USDA Rural Development has awarded rural Illinois businesses, including the Danville business. This funding is paramount to helping rural Illinois businesses, farmers, and ag producers stay profitable while also reducing energy consumption and enabling high energy users to convert to renewable energy sources, Hammond said. People often underestimate the significance of a $50,000, $20,000, or even $10,000 grant and how much relief it can give those local business owners. The department is awarding $567,000 in Illinois for projects through the Rural Energy for America program. Danville Hospital Volunteers Lighten Patients' Moods by Jennifer Bailey of the DanComNews.com. Entering the OSF Healthcare Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville can be scary, upsetting, and anxiety-ridden for some people. They may be undergoing medical testing, getting ready for surgery or another procedure and a stay there, or visiting loved ones. To assist the public and help ease some of these worries or uncertainties are the recognizable and sharply dressed Red Vest Volunteers. Three of these volunteers, Red Vest Volunteers, are John Kelly, Ken Pickard, and Jim Mulvaney, who have been affectionately dubbed the Three Amigos because they like to work together, joke around, and lighten the mood for everyone they meet. OSF officials say they are the perfect example of the volunteer spirit to recognize National Volunteer Week, which begins April 21st. It's never too late to start to volunteer in your community. The three usually are at Danville Hospital Wednesday afternoons and all days on Fridays. Kelly, 80, was born and raised in Vermilion County. He had a lot of different jobs, but retired from the Illinois Department of Corrections. He and his wife were always coaching football, baseball, and doing other things. He's been a hospital volunteer for 14 years and says it's the most rewarding in just interacting with the people. I could tell you 100 stories, but you know, somewhere along the line, they said it's more blessed to give than receive. Well, they're right, because we get more out of this, Kelly said. It really is enjoyable. I'd miss it, he said. It's just the group we've got and the interacting with the people. He jokingly said, we dress nice so we can get away with murder, not literally, because they trust us if we dress nice. Kelly said people don't know what they're missing if they're not volunteering. Danville School Foundation thanks donors and highlights projects by Jennifer Bailey. Mead Park Elementary School 3rd and 4th grade students Maya Trimble, Renaya Grimes, and McKaylin Alexander told a room full of Danville Public School Education donors Thursday morning about the fun they have with their school's loose system. Mia said what she loves about the system is that it uses technology to have kids have energy and it helps them run around without having to get bored. Renaya and McKaylin said they like to play games on it, such as throwing balls everywhere at the wall. Pieces can then crumble on the digital projection screen on the wall. The system picks up on the presence of the ball hitting the wall. It's all from a sensor projector, said Mead Park Principal Tanner DeLaurier. McKaylin added that the system calibrates how you throw the ball. The loose system is now serving 327 students at Mead Park. Physical education teacher Tyler Mink said it's not just used for PE, and it's inclusive for all students to use. The system is also used as positive behavior interventions and support rewards for dance parties, music, school speakers. It hooks up to the internet and YouTube and has other uses by students and staff to learn and have fun. Mink uses a lanyard with remote control to teach and can use it anywhere in the gym. He can walk up with his hand and slap it, and the loose system will interact with his hand. Mink says he thinks this technology use is for the better for students. It's the only loose system within 30 miles of area schools. The Danville School District's 118th Fine Arts Summer Camp students also have used the loo to learn dance moves and for other interactive uses. Thanks to donors from the foundation, Liberty Elementary School and Southwest Elementary School will be receiving the loo system, and more schools could in the future as well. The Danville Public School Foundation thanked donors at its 2024 365 Club Breakfast at Turtle Run Banquet Center on Thursday and celebrated its fundraising. Donor funds help with educational opportunities for the students in which tax dollars don't provide. This is the 15th year for the breakfast, and it's the only fundraiser for the foundation. They usually average about 130 people at the annual breakfast. The foundation has provided more than $1 million in support for school projects since 1989. Projects most recently funded by the foundation include the playground communication boards for $2,200, all elementary school playgrounds, and Southview Upper Elementary and Northridge Middle School playgrounds will be receiving 8 communication boards. The Special Education Department asked the foundation for the boards for nonverbal students. These are the same communication boards they use in the classrooms. They're going to move them out, one on every playground, so the nonverbal kids that use them can communicate with the teachers and other students, Richard said. The Danville Ambucks chapter is looking to put the communication boards at the city's playgrounds, too. Another project recently funded, digital signage project for $12,795 at Danville High School. 18 television screens will be going up throughout DHS, with broadcast by the multimedia students throughout the day. DHS is doing away with homeroom next school year, where students don't always pay attention to announcements. The announcements will now be seen on screens in the hallway to better catch students' attention. The cost includes the television screens and first year of the software subscription. Several DHS multimedia students spoke about the new system, which are basically digital bulletin boards. The signs also can help with wayfinding for school visitors. Another project, the Rise Up Physical Education Measurement Equipment, $5,571 at Danville High School. Weightlifting is a popular elective at DHS, and teacher Tyler Arnholt wanted to get away from just evaluating students on how much they can lift, said Richard and Stephanie Yates, Foundation Development Director. This tracking system measures how high they can jump with vertical jumps and strength and performance. Polymetrics training, exercise training that uses speed and force to different movements to build muscle power, can be a bigger part of the weight room curriculum. It can be used for PE and athletics and should reach about 150 students per semester. Richard said having state-of-the-art equipment at schools also helps retain teachers. We've spoken already about the LU Interactive Systems. Also in the STEM group, Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math, Carts and Supplies received $14,215 in a recent foundation grant. And finally, Eclipse Viewing Glasses were provided to all students, staff, and schools as part of the foundation's funding. Continuing with news from our schools, school district adopts new gun detection system. Georgetown Ridge Farm Community Unit School District has adopted a Zero Eyes proactive AI-based gun detection and intelligent sectional awareness solution to protect students, faculty, and staff against gun-related threats. The public school district in Georgetown said it is committed to providing a positive learning environment and shaping productive members of society who are successful, self-efficient, and well-rounded individuals. It has 880 pre-K and K-12 students enrolled in its three schools. The district prioritizes school safety by forming close relationships with local law enforcement and implementing a range of high-tech security measures across its campuses. Zero Eyes has been added to its multi-layered security plan to detect illegally brandished guns on campus and reduce response time in the case of a gun-related incident. Zero Eyes provides a proactive layer of security that further enhances our comprehensive safety plan, said Georgetown Ridge Farm CUSD Superintendent Gene Neal. Integrating Zero Eyes will allow us to improve security in more vulnerable areas like athletic events and parking lots. We are grateful to have their protection 24/7 to help our community feel safer during these times of uncertainty. The gun detection and intelligent situational awareness software layers onto Georgetown Ridge Farm CUSD's existing digital security cameras. If a gun is identified, images are instantly shared with the Zero Eyes Operations Center, staffed constantly by specially trained U.S. military and law enforcement veterans. If these experts determine that the threat is valid, they dispatch alerts and actionable intelligence, including visual description, gun type, and last known location, to local law enforcement and school staff as quickly as 3 to 5 seconds from detection. Speaking of student success, DAC Esports team excels in national competitions. Daniel Area Community College has announced the achievements of its esports team in national collegiate competitions. With athletes demonstrating skill and strategic acumen, DEC has established itself as an up-and-coming powerhouse in the community college esports landscape. Leading the DEC team, DC Kennedy, a culinary major and the esports team captain, has advanced to the Final Four of the Mario Kart Premier Division. Kennedy is competing for his second national championship. He was awarded his 2023 national championship ring during halftime of the DAC men's basketball game on February 14th. Kennedy became DAC's first ever national champion in esports and is looking to repeat in 2024. Jake Dupree, a general studies major, currently ranks 10th in the Mario Kart College Series. His consistent performance significantly contributed to the team's success this season. Sebastian Burden, holding the 13th rank in the Mario Kart CS division, is not only a presidential scholar, but also a talented guitar player in the college's pep band. Justin Wilkin, an applied computer science major, excels as the captain of the Smash Brothers crew, securing the second rank nationally in the Smash Brothers crew Open Series OS division. Wilkin's leadership and skill have been pivotal in propelling his team towards national recognition. The DAC esports team competes in Mario Kart and Smash Brothers crew. Mario Kart challenges players with fast-paced races featuring iconic Nintendo characters, while Smash Brothers crews test team strategy and combat skills in intense multiplayer battles. Guido Estevez, the esports coordinator and a recent DAC graduate, shared his enthusiasm. "This is not only very exciting, but it shows the beauty of esports. Even a small community college like DAC can have a nationally ranked esports program." After the NJCAA playoff, several members of the team are going to a pro tournament in Las Vegas. DAC's success in national competitions underscores the growth and potential of its esports program. The college is dedicated to offering students varied opportunities to hone their skills in competitive settings, equipping them for achievements both within and beyond the gaming arena. Turn our attention to people being recognized in our news. Brandon Schweitzer, Thriving at Home in Vermilion County, by Jody Ingram. It is an honor and a privilege to announce this week's I Am, You Are, We Are recipient, Brandon Schweitzer. Brandon is a 21-year-old veteran of the United States Marine Corps and is the current state representative for the 104th District serving Danville and portions of Vermilion County. Brandon grew up on a horse farm and participated in 4-H throughout his entire childhood. He has been married to his wonderful wife Amy for nearly 14 years, and they have three amazing boys together. Brandon met his wife in April of 2009 during a job fair hosted by DAC. Speaking of job fairs, don't forget to join us at the Career Expo on April 24th at the David S. Palmer Arena. You might find your next career or even your future spouse. Amy was working for the Boys and Girls Club of Danville, and he was a recruiter for the Marine Corps. Brandon signed up to do a booth at the job fair, hoping to end up recruiting the next generation of Marines, but ended up finding something better, his future wife. They are now married and have three boys, Roman, 12, born in Urbana, Preston, 9, born in Okinawa, Japan, and Deacon, 7, born in Honolulu, Hawaii. All three boys currently attend school at Northeast Elementary. Brandon's why is everything he does always comes back to his family. It is extremely important to him that his kids grow up in a community that they can thrive in if they choose to stay and not have to leave to become more successful. This is one of the many reasons that his family chose to call Vermilion County home. Another reason Brandon has chosen Vermilion County is all the wonderful things it has to offer: two state parks, an amazing lake, wonderful golf courses, and close proximity to small towns, small cities, and large cities. Brandon loves golfing, hiking, fishing, and spending time with his family. One of his favorite pastimes is sitting by the lake in the early morning hours fishing, and by that he means it's more casting than actually catching fish, but it's still fun. He also loves to volunteer for Little League and Northeast Elementary. He currently serves on two boards, the Vermilion Advantage and Birth to Five. Thinking about these beautiful things within our community, Kevin Cullen, the Irish hiker, is bringing our attention to one of those places in his column this week. Column titled, Beauty, History Abundant at Adams Building. After years of utter neglect, the once busy, once beautiful Adams Building may again become one of the gems of downtown Danville. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. A month ago, the Danville City Council voted to spend $38,700 for a feasibility study of the vacant five-story office building at 139-141 North Vermilion Street. City officials say that if the structure is sound, incentives could be offered to a developer who could create offices and/or 6 to 8 apartments on each floor. Demolition, on the other hand, could cost the city more than $1 million and result in another empty lot. There's still beauty there. Danville Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said of the building, there certainly is, and a lot of history, too. In 2000, the National Park Service listed it on the National Historic Register of Historic Places. That doesn't protect it from demolition, but listed buildings can qualify for federal and state grants, loans, and tax breaks to help their owners preserve and restore them. The owner hasn't paid property taxes on it for years. Meanwhile, the roof is leaked, and before the city boarded them up, rain and snow blew in through several open windows. The Adams Building, constructed in 1905 for $130,000, was a lot of money 115 years ago, was once described as one of the most complete and modern office buildings in the state outside of Chicago. It speaks of the old downtown when physicians, dentists, lawyers, and other professionals rented space in handsome multi-story office buildings. The landmark structure with its cream-colored brick facade, massive limestone columns, and secondary exterior walls of locally made brick was originally named the Bridget Building after its builder, businessman Wilhelm N. Bridget. The elegant marble-clad first floor was designed as a bank with walk-in vault and safe deposit boxes, but it housed the Vermilion County Building Association from 1905 to 1938 and Interstate Water Company from 1938 to 1974. In 1910, Bridget sold it to Harvey C. Adams, president of the Adams Insurance Agency, president of Danville Brick Company, vice president of Danville Lumber Company, secretary of the Vermilion County Building Association, a member of the Danville City Council, and Vermilion County supervisor. He also was a lawyer who knew President Theodore Roosevelt. In Danville and Vermilion County, no man is more respected for what he accomplished than H.C. Adams, Lottie Jones wrote in her two-volume County History in 1911. In 1922, Adams sold the building to John Harrison and William Parrott, the publisher and business manager, respectively, of the Commercial News. And in 1928, Harrison and Parrott added a fifth floor, which was rented to Danville Electric Coal Company. You can see the stone cornice of the original roofline. The fifth floor front has stone arches with carved shields and urns. The Adams Building had the last operator-run office elevator in Danville. Various office spaces were rented until 2016. Karen Lang Coomer, an Urbana-based architectural historian, wrote this in her 31-page National Register nomination in 2000. Its most striking quality is its monumental stone first story consisting of Greek Doric columns and full academically correct Doric entablature. Its handsome facade exhibits the characteristics of the style in its symmetrical facade, masonry construction, and use of monumental architectural orders. The Adams Building is a splendid early 1905 example of the refined classical style and stands impressively apart from other commercial buildings on the block. With any luck, it will live to serve a new generation and a revitalized downtown. And again, those thoughts were brought to us today by Kevin Cullen, the Irish hiker. Let's turn our attention this morning to the death notices. These obituaries were received by 5 o'clock on Friday. Barbara Graves. Barbara Graves, 92, passed away on April 16th at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Her celebration of life will be at 11:30 a.m. on Tuesday, April 23rd, at Second Church of Christ in Danville, with Dr. Dale Neal officiating. Burial will be at 2 p.m. on Tuesday, April 23rd, at Spring Hill Cemetery. Cheryl Martin. Cheryl Martin passed away on April 17th. A celebration of life will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday, April 24th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Dr. Dale Daniel will officiate. Burial will be in Danville National Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday, April 24th at the funeral home. This concludes today's reading of our obituaries. I love when businesses recognize their staff, and our Star of the Month at Liberty Village this month is Lisa Lowry. Lisa Lowry has been chosen as the star of the month for the month of March at Liberty Village of Danville. Lisa works in the dietary department as a cook for Hawthorne Inn. Congratulations, Lisa Lowry. Well, spring is here, and that means it's baseball season. Let's take a look at what's going on in our local high schools as it relates to the baseball games. Cameron Steinbaugh leads Tigers past Trojans, written by reporter Chad Dare, Westville. Every baseball coach loathes leadoff walks from his pitchers. Inevitably, they turn into runs, which turn into losses. That's exactly what happened Friday afternoon at Potomac Grade School. Armstrong Potomac senior right-hander Colin Asbury gave up a pair of leadoff walks in the fifth and sixth innings, and the Westville Tigers turned them into five runs on their way to a 5-1 victory in the Vermilion Valley Conference baseball game. Colin knew it, said Armstrong Potomac coach Wade Rogers. He is a heck of a pitcher, and those things will happen. Asbury, who entered Friday's game with a 0.00 earned run average in 25.1 innings, gave himself a 1-0 lead with a solo home run in the fourth, and on the mound he had only allowed one hit while striking out eight of the first 12 batters he faced on Friday. But the first batter he faced in the fifth was Westville sophomore Matt Darling, who drew a walk on five pitches. Easton Barney, who singled in the second inning, followed with another hit, and the Tigers had runners on first and third with no outs. We were looking for something to spark our offense, and the walk was all it took, Westville coach Joe Braza said. Senior Cade Schomburg tied the game with a 1-1 with an RBI single to center, and the Tigers took the lead for good when Barney scored on a wild pitch with two outs in the inning. So lots going on in our prep team's games coming up this week. Let's take a look at what's coming on Monday. We have prep baseball on Monday at Fountain Central at Benton Central at 4 p.m. Armstrong Potomac will play at Georgetown Ridge Farm at 4:30, Cisna Park at Salt Fork at 4:30, Hoopston Area at Watsika at 4:30, Iroquois West at Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin at 4:30, Milford will be at Westville at 4:30, North Central at North Vermilion at 4:30, Oakwood will be playing at Schlarman Academy at 4:30, Peoria Notre Dame at Danville at 4:30, and Covington at Danville at 5 p.m. In boys golf, Covington and South Vermilion will be at Attica at 3:30, playing at the Harrison Hills Golf Club, and Southmont will be at Fountain Central at 3:30, playing at Rivercrest. In prep softball, Southmont will be at Covington at 4, Armstrong Potomac at Georgetown Ridge at 4:30, Chrisman at Salt Fork at 4:30, Crawfordsville at Fountain Central at 4:30, Danville at Champaign Central 4:30, Hoopston Area at Watsika at 4:30, Iroquois West at Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin at 4:30, Milford at Westville at 4:30, North Central at North Vermilion at 4:30, and Oakwood at Schlarman Academy at 4:30. Prep girls tennis today, Covington at Park Heritage at 4, and Fountain Central at Lafayette Central Catholic at 4 p.m. Prep boys track, Crawfordsville, Fountain Central, and North Montgomery at Seeker at 4, and Armstrong, Potomac, Bismarck, Henning, Rossville, Alvin, Milford, Cisna Park, Schlarman Academy, and Westville at Hoopston Area at 4:30 p.m. That was a mouthful. Prep girls track today has Crawfordsville, Fountain Circle, and North Montgomery at Seeker at 4 p.m., and the same group of Armstrong, Potomac, Bismarck, Henning, Rossville, Alvin, Milford, Cisna Park, Schlarman Academy, and Westville all will be at Hoopston Area at 4:30. And today, women's college golf, the NJCAA Central District Tournament will be have Danville Area Community College at Twin Hill Golf Club in Joplin, Missouri. Lots going on in spring sports. For those of you that are sports fans, I'm certain you've heard of Caitlin Clark. And I think it's interesting. We're going to take a look on the opinion page today at an article written by John Krull, titled Caitlin Clark, Catalyst for Change. Last year, national television broadcast exactly one of the Indiana Fever's 36 WNBA games. This year, things will be a little different. There will be a 40 regular game season and 36 of the Fever's contests. That's 90% to be broadcast nationally. What happened? Two words, Caitlin Clark. Clark may be the hottest name in all sports right now. Although her Iowa Hawkeyes did not win the NCAA Women's Basketball Championship, Clark electrified the nation and the world with her play. In each of the last three games she played during the tournament, a new record for viewership was set. The championship game, in which Iowa fell in defeat to South Carolina, drew 18.7 million viewers, peaking at 24 million at one point during the broadcast. By contrast, the men's championship battle drew an audience of 14.8 million, which means the women played for a crowd roughly 25% larger than the guys did. Just as important, the women's championship game was the most widely viewed basketball game in 5 years. The Fever had the first pick in the WNBA draft. They wisely used it to choose Clark. Her arrival has already made an impact. The demand for tickets to Fever games and the prices people must pay for them have jumped in many places by 500%. Jerseys and other forms of fan apparel have also formed a skyrocketing market. Even that does not capture the full importance of Clark's presence on the court and in the world's consciousness. She appears to be one of those protein transformational figures, one who will alter lightly forever the way we view both sports and women. Much attention has been focused on the relatively paltry sum, under $80,000, she will receive as a rookie in the WNBA. That's about 1/200th of what the NBA top draft pick earned this year. The disparity, though, is about to change. Clark will be the catalyst for that change. Her massive celebrity and earnings power will kick open doors, knock down walls, and shatter ceilings. Where she goes, others will follow. That she has become the face of women's basketball already has prompted carping from within and about the sport. One meme that pollinated much of social media offered a pointed commentary about the irony of a white girl earning so much attention when she lost to a mostly black team coached by a black woman. The criticism has validity, but also is somewhat beside the point. A tide as large as the one Clark has generated will lift many, many boats, regardless of skin color or ancestry of who those captains of the boats. This is the nature both of figures who loom as large as Clark and of moments laden with as much possibility as this one is. Clark takes pride in being a basketball player, but she really is much more than that. She's a jump-shooting argument for women to receive as much as men, and maybe even a little bit more. The historic argument in sports for women receiving lower compensation than men was that the guys were the ones who put more butts in the seats and attracted more eyeballs to the screens. But Clark's demonstrating that this is no longer true. Now, and perhaps for the foreseeable future, she has the largest constituency in sports. Just as Taylor Swift has assumed a place in pop culture as large as that of Elvis Presley and the Beatles in earlier eras, Clark now stands shoulder to shoulder with Muhammad Ali and Michael Jordan, figures who transcended the world of sports. The predictions that she will expand and redefine what's possible for women athletes and women, period, are short-sighted. She's already done that. The only question that remains is just how fast and far the changes she brings in her wake will go. There is irony in this, of course. The fact that Caitlin Clark has emerged to shake off the unjust constraints placed on women and girls on the court while much of the political culture works to place artificial limits on them is proof that human history has a cruel sense of humor. But that's the big picture. The smaller picture is much more fun. For the next few years, we Hoosiers will get to watch Clark swell the dreams of girls and women everywhere, one swish at a time. Thank you, John Kroll. We have just a few moments together left, and I thought I would share with you a recipe. And I know that sounds rather odd, but I have to tell you, I've never seen a recipe for dandelion sour cream salad. This is a recipe for dandelions smothered in your favorite homemade sour cream. However, you can use the sour cream part for other seasonal greens as well. The same sour cream is great when used with any in-season, fresh-from-the-garden lettuce and endive. Home-cured cam goes with it. This recipe includes 4 hard-boiled eggs, 4 cups of packed young dandelion greens, 1/2 cup of mayonnaise, 1 cup of apple cider, and 2.5 cups of whole milk. You mix the mayonnaise, vinegar, milk, and salt in a quart jar. Shake it until it's smooth. Put the eggs and dandelion greens in a large bowl and pour the mixture over. It seems easy. It looks interesting. Somebody better tell me how this thing tastes. This has been Terry Burdick reading to you from the Commercial News in Vermilion County from Saturday and Sunday, April 20 and 21st. I look forward to reading with you again soon.